Lake Effect continues on WUWM. I'm Mitch Teich. Hayes Bilingual School in Milwaukee scores 62.2 on the state report card system. That means it's just shy of meeting expectations. Most MPS schools fall at or below that level, but Hayes is different. Its growth score is 86, well above the state average. The school's dual immersion approach seems to be generating improvements in both math and reading. To Anita Pandey, schools like Hayes illustrate the need to consider language in education, and not just at specialized schools. Pandey is a professor of linguistics and coordinator of professional communication at Morgan State University in Baltimore. In her new book, Language Building Blocks, she argues deeper consideration of home languages and dialects could help a range of students. Speaking to Lake Effect's Amy Kiley, Pandey applied her research to Milwaukee's diverse student population. She began by defining some key terms.
Basically, these are dialects of English. So standard English is just the institutionalized dialect. It has an army and a navy, so to speak. The institutions respect it, but it has borrowed heavily from the stigmatized and not so accepted dialects, including Black English vernacular, which during the 2000 period was referred to by some different names as the Ebonics, which was a term given by African-American psychologists. But, you know, you might recall the time when there was a big controversy surrounding that dialect. But then, of course, we have other stigmatized dialects. But ironically, they have contributed immensely to standard English. So, for instance, there are lots of African terms and African-American expressions that have now mainstreamed, the latest one being my bad, and, of course, raise the roof, and thousands of other words from music, including mojo and salsa, that actually originated from Africa originally.
And why do you choose not to use the term Ebonics in your book?
Because a lot of people reject the term. They feel that it, number one, it sort of focuses only on the phonology, the sounds. And a lot of people, African Americans specifically, reject the term because they feel it sort of labels them. And ironically, research shows that more non-African Americans are now using this dialect because of popular culture, including in South Africa as well.
In terms of education, what's the relationship between being bilingual and speaking two dialects, being bidialectal?
I would say they are very analogous. My study back in 2000, I actually compared how African-American speakers of Black English vernacular from the inner city, predominantly Chicago area, performed comparably to low-level ESL students, English as a second language students, for whom, for instance, another language is spoken at home predominantly. So they're similar, and I actually advocate using similar practices, additive language practices, where you actually put both dialects. And see, the term dialect is essentially a variety of a language.
And how are these issues playing out in Milwaukee, a city recent data says is 40% African American and over 17% Hispanic?
Very, very good question you've asked. Milwaukee, like most places in the Midwest and all over the country, is seeing a population change. And what we're seeing is that the schools are relatively underprepared. So many of the teachers, for instance, were prepared for a time period when the predominantly white student population of a certain social class was the predominant population. And now we are seeing increased diversity. And what you see is consistently underperforming students in reading, language arts, according to the latest data, mathematics. And this is on the Wisconsin Knowledge and Concepts exam. In a study by IFF, the Illinois Facilities Fund, 8 zip codes were identified as underperforming. And not surprisingly, 6 of them are to the north, in predominantly African-American neighborhoods, including Harambee, Brownsville, and then, of course, 2 to the south, like Layton Park, and, you know, where largely Hispanic populations are settling. And so you see this pattern of a city that is increasingly minority culturally, and yet the teaching population is predominantly white and female. And unless the teachers have professional development or have been trained in cultural diversity and in embracing the home language, then the students are not going to be performing at the level that we're looking to see. So, in fact, ironically, the latest research shows that the choice schools are not outperforming the MPS schools, and that it has nothing to do with school type. It has everything to do with pedagogy.
for these Milwaukee students who are coming from backgrounds that don't involve standard English, what are some of the disadvantages they face?
The first disadvantage they face is that many of them are treated like they don't come with the knowledge base. So, for instance, if you don't recognize the home language, then the children do not have a bridge to the school culture. Because language, as I argue in my book, Language Building Blocks, is the centerpiece of instruction. Language is the It's both the means, the vehicle, as well as the end. And if you do not develop a child's language skills, this includes vocabulary, pronunciation, then they will have trouble with reading. And many of these students, especially, for example, Hispanic students, are coming from oral cultures where, for instance, poetry and the spoken word is very alive and well, especially in African-American cultures. And then you come to a school culture that emphasizes reading, but without equipping the children, and there's a dissonance between the phonetic languages and then standard English, which is a very confusing language as it is, and a dialect, because the reading does not resemble the speech form. So the students are often at a loss unless you use, for example, debate and more participatory styles of learning, which are more the exception than the rule.
And you mentioned reading. Some studies indicate reading to children is essential for academic achievement, and others place less importance on it. But if reading to children does improve academic achievement, does the dialect or language of that text matter?
Absolutely. When you're using, for example, just predominantly standard English-based texts, not only is there a cultural divide, you know, students perform better when the text is familiar to them, when they have an interest in the substance. And also, if the dialect is familiar, because reading and writing are not natural instincts. We're born with the ability to learn language, the spoken medium. But the written and the reading and the writing, these are secondary literacy forms. These are creations to record speech, and they're very arbitrary in the case of English. And also, you have a class distinction. Many of the minorities come from a different social class. In fact, Milwaukee has the highest case of a lack of suburbanization of African Americans. So most of them are concentrated 90% in the inner city. And while some Hispanic populations are now settling in some of the other areas, we still see a predominant class distinction where, for example, the reading-writing tradition is not something that is embraced in the home. It's more of a spoken and an oral tradition, and we don't recognize these hidden literacies. So unless we as teachers investigate what is happening in the homes of these students and have them create their own literature or co-create them with their families, we're not bridging the home and the school and the primary and the secondary cultures. And that's why these students are predominantly failing.
And you touched on this a bit, but what does this issue say about society? For instance, in the city of Milwaukee, minorities are the majority, but we still use standard English in teaching.
And that's probably not going to change. What we need to do is bridge the gap, and using the home language through code mixing and code switching, multimedia, global literature, and, for example, international movies, to take these students from their own home, their familiar environment, to borrow a term from German, creating Gemütlichkeit, this idea of family and community in the classroom, because with familiarity, students begin to open up and they take an interest in learning, and they can see that what they know is not being frowned upon, but is part of who they are and is part of their creativity. And they become part of the creativity that America seeks and that the world is looking for, multilingualism, bi-dialectal skills to be embraced rather than rejected.
And you mentioned code mixing and code switching. What do these terms mean?
These terms simply mean, as they suggest, mixing one dialect with another, one language with another, and there is no limit. Typically in linguistics, we say if you're switching across sentence boundaries, that's code switching, and code mixing is within a sentence. But you could use them interchangeably, and a lot of researchers do.
What happened in Oakland, California in the 1990s that was so important to this discussion?
What happened was, as you know, the Oakland School District discovered and actually took action when there was a large dropout rate reported in the Oakland schools area. And they decided that most of their students were coming to the classrooms with a home dialect that at that time was dubbed Ebonics, which they said was genetically related to English and was misunderstood. they didn't realize that they were referring to the connections and the mutual intelligibility between Standard English and this home dialect. And so there was another iteration of that particular bill. And what they were trying to do is use the home dialect, namely Ebonics, and use it using bidialectal readers to teach children Standard English. And this is an approach termed contrastive analysis. You put both the dialects on the same level. You can use elicitation to get the children to provide the different dialect versions. And as a group, you can collectively show that what the students know is just as important as what they're going to learn, namely Standard English. And that they can switch back and forth in literature. You see some of the best awards, including the Booker Prize and Pulitzer's, going to people who are using language, namely Standard English, creatively all over the world, like African dialects or versions of it and Indian English. So you see that there is a recognition of a creativity in English, which is a global language. And we need to recognize that in the United States as well.
Oakland's story did prompt at least some talk of considering Ebonics in education in Milwaukee. Could accounting for the Black English vernacular here and now help kids in Milwaukee learn?
Absolutely. I am very confident that if we were to try contrastive analysis and the additive language approach, where all teachers were informed in the area of social linguistics, either by way of workshops or through training like the Target program at Salisbury University on the eastern shore of Maryland, where the teachers have gone back and after several years they see improved test scores in reading and math and science, we will see some very, very wonderful results. I can guarantee you of that.
Some people say the Black English vernacular, BEV, is improper. So why do you celebrate it?
I celebrate it because these are all terms created by those in positions of power to undermine the people who are still struggling to be recognized. So it's a class distinction. Ironically, even in early modern English, the form axed was actually proper English. And today, when African Americans who are often the ones who use this term axed, they're told that it's improper. So language changes constantly. African American English has contributed to the wealth and the diversity of Standard English, not just at the vocabulary level, but in terms of discourse. And that is, the, for example, greetings and the popular culture, the rhyme and rhythm of an oral culture that makes music and learning faster. Because when you learn using rhyme, you remember more. You are able to memorize math more. For example, take languages like Chinese. In Cantonese, the words for 7 and 4 rhyme, and children can actually remember their numbers faster. And we have cases of students in Cantonese recognizing numbers in the billions because of their vocabulary rhyming. And this is an analogy that I would say is similar to Black English vernacular. It's very musical, and it should be celebrated because it can help our children learn much faster, not just African-American students, but all students. And all home languages that these children are bringing can contribute to everybody's success.
And when you talk about celebrating who kids are when they come to the classroom, how does that validation of their linguistic and possibly cultural background help them psychologically learn?
Very, very good question. I cannot overemphasize this. When children feel that they are recognized, there's a confidence. It's a sense of recognition of your roots. When you do not hear your language or your dialect mentioned or used in any formal fashion, you imbibe the belief that it is not important. So you see a lot of children rejecting their home languages, developing a sense of insecurity, or being told not to speak their home languages, as many special educators advise children who take on symptoms of Asperger's syndrome, which is not necessarily the case that they have it, but maybe they're still at the level where their language, because language, there is no timetable for language. And maybe they're just traumatized. When you take out the home language, you have cases of high dropout rates. And ironically, or rather, you see that Milwaukee and Racine in the last year alone had the highest dropout rates. and that's not surprising. But you also see students in different parts of the country, not just in Milwaukee, for example, disappearing because, like in the case of Texas, in El Paso School District, there was a superintendent who disappeared students to improve test scores. And so it's, I'll give you the analogy of the roots. When you cut out the roots, 10% of the students, when you immerse them in standard English environments, will take root. But the vast majority, 90%, will wilt. And so you really need to validate the home language because it is who these students are. And if you don't feel accepted, you don't feel comfortable, you don't feel like learning.
In general, how would Milwaukee benefit educationally from a fresh look at language and dialects?
They would flourish because Milwaukee is home to so much diversity. It is in the right spot, you know, geographically. It has the WIDA consortium there. It can contribute so much to this country and already has. And if we take this diversity and tap it, we will see that the United States is not just underprepared for the global era that we're living in, but is part of it. So if you contrast, for example, the number of students abroad speaking another language, over 80% worldwide versus the United States, only 6%, we can see that we're underprepared for the globalization that's happening. And we can begin by tapping the diversity in our midst and using that to prepare ourselves for this wonderful future that lies ahead of us.
Dr. Anita Pandey teaches linguistics at Morgan State University in Baltimore. Her new book is called Language Building Blocks. She spoke with Lake Effect's Amy Kiley and argued an increased focus on language could help Milwaukee students learn. A Lake Effect essayist looks back a decade and to the South for a solution for what to do about the city's basketball arenas. That's when we return on Milwaukee Public Radio.